So with me on the phone today is cartoonist and columnist Ted Rall, whose cartoons regularly appear in over 140 publications. He is also the author of many books and graphic novels, including Attitude, the New Subversive Political Cartoonists, To Afghanistan and Back, and most recently Silk Road to Ruin, Is Central Asia the New Middle East? Welcome to the program, Ted.
Thanks for having me.
So what would you say has been the most exciting experience in your career as a cartoonist?
Well, it depends on how you define exciting. I think maybe the first thing that comes to mind was getting the phone call from Chronicle Features in 1991 saying that they were going to try to syndicate my cartoons, because that was my huge break. I'd given up any hope that anyone was ever going to want to publish my stuff, and so that was huge for me. In terms of pure excitement, there's always the fear-based excitement of when I went to Afghanistan in 2001 and found myself in a war zone. That's exciting, that's one way to put it.
And you went to Afghanistan to cover the war for the Village Voice. Tell me, what compelled you to travel to Afghanistan as soon as George W. Bush declared war on the country?
Well, it was a frustrating experience. I had already been to Central Asia several times in 97, 99, 2000, and twice in 2000. And I sat home and watched the war unfold on American television. And what I was seeing did not jibe with my experience either of Afghanistan as a visitor or of Central Asia in general. I saw a lot of disinformation, propaganda, and what I was certain was just an incomplete picture of what was going on. So my first motivation was really curiosity. I was dying to see what was really going on and what the U.S. was really doing there. And I didn't really think of a way to put it together and figure it out for myself until the opportunity arose to go to Afghanistan myself pretty late in the war. I ended up going in mid-November. At that point, the only part of Afghanistan that remained under Taliban control, strictly speaking, were the southern city of Kandahar and also the north. In particular, the province of Kunduz, where I ended up going. And so I was there for just over three weeks. And so I sort of watched, I was there during the fall of Kabul and the fall of the Taliban. And that was I think my primary motivation was just pure personal curiosity to see what was the difference between what we were being told versus what was actually going on.
And what were the differences between what you were being told and what was going on?
Well, they were night and day. Here in the United States, we were being shown images of women burning their burqas in the streets, of men getting shaves and playing music and flying kites and doing all the things that had been prohibited under Taliban rule. We saw the images of rejoicing and joy throughout the country, but as it turned out, really things weren't like that at all. Women were still all behind burqas, and when I asked people about the images that we had seen, we were able to confirm that the women who had burned their burqas had done so for money paid for by American television networks. And as soon as their burqa was burned, they'd put on a new one. And it was just, in a desperately poor country, that was viewed as a cynical but perfectly acceptable way to score a few hundred bucks. We'd see images of fierce battles between the Taliban and Northern Alliance that later turned out to have been staged. The big three networks used to pay between $500 and $1,000 per shell to have a shell fired into an empty field. And it went on and on like that. We were told that there were only, at the time that I first arrived, 12 official civilian casualties in Afghanistan countrywide, when in fact, in one bombing raid, in one bomb dropped outside of Kunduz, over 500 people were killed. And, of course, there were many tens of thousands of bombs and missiles that were dropped on civilian areas in Afghanistan during the war. So it was just a giant scam. And really, pretty much anything you saw on television or read in the paper was not to be trusted.
How did you get along with other journalists there? Some of these people were from these big networks spreading these lies.
There was definitely a class hierarchy. Television had the most money, and print had the least. Radio fell somewhere in between. I went both as a print and a radio person, so I guess I was at the top of the lower class. I would be maybe a striver in that hierarchy. So the TV people definitely, I think, were reviled by the print and radio journalists because they were willing to create and pay for news. They were willing to co-opt themselves and compromise basic journalistic ethics by staying in the warlords' houses and accepting their armed hospitality and going to the places where they told them to go and making them look good on television. The radio and print people had a lot more ethics than that. I mean, I think the sins that you would see from the print journalists were more those of omission or ignorance. For instance, a reporter from a major American newspaper who I talked to and was quite brave and really quite a good writer and everything, but just didn't really seem to know much about the region she was in. She would overhear people mention large cities that were in the region, like for instance, Kashgar or Urumqi, that's just across the Afghan border in China. And, you know, she had never heard of them, much less knew where they were or why they would be important to Afghanistan. So that, in terms of getting along, I think the camaraderie, it's just like any kind of group, any group situation where there are people who were, who got along, who played better with others, some than others. And, I think that universally the BBC was reviled. They did a great job, especially by television standards, but they were complete and total and utter jerks. They mistreated and abused the rest of us. They endangered us on many occasions with their behavior, and they were hated. There was talk of slashing their tires on several occasions. It was that bad, whereas some of the other networks, NBC in particular, they didn't exactly do great reporting, but they were pretty good about spreading tips and helping other people out who were in a pinch. CBS less so. It just sort of depended on who was there. Personalities vary, obviously.
How were you received in the country, considering your country was bombing their country?
The Afghans had no understanding of why we were there. When I mentioned 9/11, which had only occurred 2 months earlier, most people had never heard of it, whether they were Taliban prisoners or Al-Qaeda people or Northern Alliance, even high-ranking officers, had not heard of the 9/11 attacks. And I was just dumbstruck by that. And so I asked them, well, I mean, I wasn't dumbstruck that they could be ignorant of the attacks, given that there was no media whatsoever. I mean, there's no radio, television, or print whatsoever in Afghanistan. And functionally today, that's still the case, except in the center of Kabul. And but what I didn't understand is that even the Central Asia rumor mill hadn't brought that information there. And when I asked people about it, I explained what had happened, and they just sounded just astonished, at the scale of this. And they were just universally, even Taliban people, were just appalled that someone would do such a thing. I said, well, why do you think we're here? And they said, well, the United States is now the dominant power in the region, and whoever's the dominant power in the region always invades Afghanistan. In the 1980s, it was the Soviet Union, and on three prior occasions, it was the British, and now it's your turn. And they just took it as an article of faith that the lot of Afghanistan is to be invaded from time to time. I think they didn't take it terribly personally. I mean, it seemed like they were really able to separate the contempt for the American administration that was dropping bombs upon them from the way they felt about ordinary people. I remember on several occasions being surprised to hear most people recalling the Russians quite fondly and saying, well, they were the only people who ever built anything here. They were really nice. They were pretty generous. They weren't abusive. Even when they arrested me and put me in prison, they treated me well and fed me well. And I said, well, then why did you fight them? And they said, well, it wasn't personal. They had invaded our country, and they needed to leave. So, of course, we tried to kill them, but it wasn't a personal matter. We didn't personally hate someone just because they were Russian. We don't personally dislike someone just because they're American. Not the same attitude that you would get across the border in Pakistan at all, where just appearing Western is enough to get rocks thrown at you as you drive through town.
What do you think about Canada's involvement in Afghanistan as a U.S. ally?
It's shameful. Canada is a country that those of us who are political progressives in the United States look up to. Most of us who are commentators on the political left, who are worried that the soon-to-be-signed Military Commissions Act will give the president the right to round us up, including journalists, and throw us in prisons without redress access to the courts, look to Canada as a country that we could emigrate to. It just seems like the logical place for Americans of a certain political ilk to look up to. And the Canadian government and the Canadian people ought to have known better, even though Canada and the United States were allies and are allies. The United States is no longer the United States. Under Bush, it's something different. And it would have been nice for Canada to have recognized that. That said, I can see how it's not surprising that Canada, like a lot of other countries, would have gotten hoodwinked into thinking that Afghanistan had something to do with 9/11, which it really didn't. Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt are the countries that attacked us on that day, and Afghanistan was at most Pakistan's back lot. But Canada, a lot of countries were suckered by that, even the French, even the British. So Canada got suckered too, but I think probably at this point a lot of Canadians are waking up.
What do you think the progressives on the left can do to stop the war?
In the United States?
Or Canada?
Well, I think that it's probably at this point harder for Americans to get anywhere in the current political climate. You know, if you look up the political definition of dictatorship, it says a regime where one political party or group controls all the branches of government. Now, that's what we have in the United States today. And it has been the case for six long years. The system has failed us. The constitutional system broke down. It relies on people doing the right thing even when they don't have to, and that's no longer the case. You can look at, for instance, this U.S. Supreme Court rulings on the detainees at Guantanamo and how the federal government, the executive branch, chose to ignore the Supreme Court, something that has never happened before. And so here in the U.S., the left has been rendered toothless. We really don't have any redress through the system. The media is no longer accessible. The Democratic Party isn't doing anything to fight back. or to try to hold the line. There's really just not much in the current environment that a political progressive can do here. I would say maybe a huge street action might make the desired impression were someone able to organize. In other countries like Canada, I think there's more hope. The systems haven't broken down. It's still 2000 in Canada. You know, it's not 2002 in the U.S. So, you know, you guys have that option. You guys can at least pressure your government to withdraw support for the United States' involvement in Afghanistan and in any other trouble spots that they decide to invade. In a way, we really are, we're at a loss here. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate it. It's not Germany in 1938, but maybe it's Germany in 1934. We're screwed. We need help from the outside.
Ted Rall, where do you look to for hope and inspiration?
Pardon?
Where do you look to for hope and inspiration?
Well, history always provides both hope as well as cause for despair, because these things are cyclical. We know that from history that this sort of extremism doesn't last forever. Unfortunately, we also know that periods where things improve, like during the New Deal, don't last forever either. But we know that these things come and that history ebbs and flows. So I read a lot of history and biographies, and I know that there's just so much tolerance for this kind of behavior before common sense ultimately prevails. The problem is a lot of people get hurt in the meantime. And I think that in terms of inspiration, I look to the people who came before us, journalists and politicians who had integrity and did the right thing, even though it hurt them personally. And so we have a lot of those here in the United States and around the world. Nothing new ever happens, and this is not new. We have McCarthyism and the Red Scare of the 20s, and we have the elimination of habeas corpus under President Lincoln during the Civil War, and the Sedition Act, and a lot of other dark chapters in American history, the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, to look at. So there's nothing new going on here, but it's just that it's exceptionally bad, and we're just going to have to get through this somehow.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time. Do you have any final thoughts or comments you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I think it's important to understand that politics is not a spectator sport. It's not something that people that you watch on television like a sporting event. It's something that we're all in charge of, regardless of what kind of political system we live in. So if you see something that bothers you, you have to take action yourself.
You've been listening to an interview with Ted Rall, syndicated cartoonist and columnist. His latest book, Silk Road to Ruin, Central Asia, the New Middle East, is available now on NBM Publishing. This interview was conducted by Candace Morris for the CKDU News Collective. Throw the switch on your fantasies with a little electronic ring. Clap around your little thing. Flash your pictures like with orange style.